I'm Tom Cliff, Cobblers fan and proud owner of Track NN and Cafe Track. Track NN is a social enterprise set up in 2018 to support autistic people to access employment through training, support services and creating opportunities. Research showed that just 16% of autistic adults were in full-time employment, and this is something which we are going to change. We opened our cafe on the Market Square in Northampton in January 2019 as a place where individuals could work and develop their employability skills and also be a place where people were free to be themselves. Since opening the cafe in January 2019, we have supported 36 people into paid employment and created over 75 work experience placements and visits for individuals. Since the coronavirus outbreak, we've not been able to open Cafe Track to its full capacity, and we've instead taken our offering online. You can help support us by buying coffee virtually at buymeacoffee.com/cafetrack. Your money goes to helping us to continue to create opportunities for autistic adults to gain employment.
Rain again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup, and Northampton 3! Yeah!
Hello, welcome to the It's All Cobblers to Me preview show. My name's Charles. It's very nice to have you here. I'm joined, as usual, by my good friend and Bristolian these days, Danny Brothers. How are you, Danny? You okay?
Hey, I'm all right. I'm a bit nervous about this. I'm not going to go out of the house if it don't go right at the weekend.
It's going to be one of those.
Definitely not going to go running. Yeah, I usually go running in my cobbler shirt, so I probably won't do that if it all goes to pot.
It's fine, mate. Just run around shouting 98 out the window or, you know, every street corner you get to. I wouldn't worry about it. There's more important things in the past.
That's true.
It's been one of those weeks, hasn't it? It feels very short because obviously we last played on Monday, on Easter Monday, with that pretty limp display against Hull. And then, you know, we're back in action on Saturday. So there's a much shorter turnaround. And it kind of feels like there's not really an awful lot for us to talk about.
Yeah, it's weird not having a Tuesday night game, but then it being on the Monday, because it feels like it's a midweek game, but it wasn't really, because it was just such a short weekend that it took us through our usual emotions of, yeah, we're going to stay up, and no, we're useless. all in the space of 4 days rather than the space of 4 or 5 days. So, yeah, it's probably be handy for the rest so we can fully focus on this game, because this is pretty much do or die now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it's. I'm not going to use the words or the phrase that you normally jinx us with, Danny.
It's not worked at all this season.
It's absolutely not, mate. No, not at all. So I'm not going to use it. It is, though, probably the biggest game of the season that we've got left. But then again, once it's gone, regardless of what the result is, the next game will be the biggest game, won't it? And it'll just go on and on like that. So I don't know. We have got a Bristol Rovers fan coming up for you in a bit. But first of all, I just want to say thank you very much for the kind words and the really nice reaction to the last pod. Obviously, we were discussing everything that had happened over the weekend, football-wise, with the Cobblers, but also the tragic passing of former Cobblers defender Lee Collins. Now, today, as we record, it has been confirmed that Lee did take his own life, and I just really want to just reaffirm what I said on It's All Cobblers to Me that was released on Tuesday, which is that if you feel like you need to reach out for any reason, then please do to anybody that will listen. And if you're the reverse and you're maybe worried about a friend or a family member, then maybe just send them a message and just say, how are you? And don't let them just, you know, say fine back at you. You know, just show them that you care, show them that you're interested, and you never know. It could just turn somebody's day around. So just with that, again, thanks very much for all the kind comments that we received off the back of it. And, you know, look, if you can go out there and just see if your friends and your family are all okay. We've obviously been missing a lot of people over the past year. So let's go away and you know, be nice and reach out to people in the wake of all of this. So from that to something else that is, well, we're kind of going for the dreadfully, or from the dreadfully sad to just the blood boiling anger that has rose up inside me today, Danny. I don't know about you, but I saw a tweet this morning that came out from Brentford FC, where it would seem that former Cobblers player Ivan Toney received, and I quote, yet more spineless racist abuse through his Instagram account this week. And it just, oh, Danny, you might have to take over because my blood's boiling here. It's
and there was a few more last night, wasn't there? There was three of the Liverpool players were targeted as well before their game against Madrid.
Was that before their game?
In the lead up to it. Yeah, so I think Callum Robinson, West Brom player, on Saturday, and obviously Toney. It's been going on all season, and it's the sad thing is that it's not shocking anymore. And like when it happens, it becomes, and it's happened again, and it's happened again. And like Brentford were right in what they said. It's spineless. It's spineless people who had sat behind a keyboard, who don't have anything better to do than go and attack someone. But not only that, to attack someone because of the colour of their skin, it's so deplorable. It's ridiculous. And like you said, it gets the blood boiling, because how is this still being let happen all these months later after it's happened before? And they're getting away with it. Nothing's been done about it. It's been going on for the majority of this season, it seems to have been, since lockdown and everything. And it's just time for these blanket statements that, if I think it's Facebook that I own Instagram, isn't it, that they put out. They put something out in February that said, oh, we're horrified about the continued abuse of footballers. We will take more action to prevent this. We're 2 months later, and what's happened? Nothing. Nothing's happened. It's like things need to happen now, especially on social media, where anyone can just log in as anyone, make up their own account, and throw abuse at someone completely without anything coming back at them. Like, when we will just get this to this point where social media becomes, you have to have some sort of ID to get in. It shouldn't take that much to set up, like, or shut it down. Like, shut social media down to make it happen. Like, I don't care if my Instagram or my Facebook goes away for a few months while they sort this out. Like, this is a bigger issue than people having, like, sending pictures of their dinner every 5 minutes, isn't it? It's a bigger issue.
Stop looking at my Instagram, you.
It's a bigger issue than us, sending all the nonsense that I send every few hours. Or, this is a bigger life thing than all of that. Like, if it needs to be shut down while they sort it out, shut it down. Because it's. I don't care how much it costs you. I don't care what we have to do to get it fixed. Just get it done now, because it's getting ridiculous. And, I can't put myself in any of those players' positions, obviously. So I can't understand how they're feeling, but you can only imagine like the hurt that it causes them. And just because their profession is something that's up in, like, this is in the spotlight. Like, it shouldn't be allowed to happen.
The thing that winds me up, I mean, you're right in what you're saying, and I completely agree with you with regards to social media, Facebook and all of that. But the thing that it comes back to at the end of the day is that there are people that are just downright scum.
Yeah.
I can't put it any other way, because essentially if you think that somebody is lesser than you are simply because they look different, or they've got a different religion, they believe in a different deity than you do, or whatever it is that you believe, you just need to take a look at yourself. I'm sorry, but it's got to the point where it's just like, you're what's wrong with society, and it's the problem is with you. It's not with me, it's with you, because you've got some sort of weird thing where you believe that you're better than anybody else. I guarantee you that every single one of the players that, you know, we've talked about, Ivan Toney, the Liverpool lads, Callum Robinson, all of those, I guarantee you that they are all better people than you are, if that's the way that you think about people of that particular skin tone. I just take a look at your life and sort yourself out and realize that you're not the be-all and end-all. And I'd kind of like to extend that also a bit to people that just don't think it seems to be a problem. It quite clearly is a problem in this country. Stop ignoring it. Stop just pretending that, you know, people that turn around and say, oh, I've got people of colour that are my friends and they don't have an issue. Maybe you need to actually speak to them a little bit more, and rather than, you know, try and force them into a corner, actually listen to what they've got to say. It just winds me up.
What it is. It's about listening, isn't it? It's like listening without any agenda, listening to their stories, listening to where they've come from, or what their daily struggles are. Like, and this goes for anything, like you say, about age, race, gender, sexuality, religion, anything. Just listen to people. And like, and there's a wider issue about government stuff as well, about how little like history lessons are being taught about this kind of thing. Like that, and that's a wider thing. But until things like that happens, then like the attitudes of some of these people are just not going to change, annoyingly and sadly. And it is a massive issue in the country, no matter how much the government say there's nothing institutionally racist about the country. Well, there clearly is, and this proves it. And it's a worldwide, it's a humanity problem that needs to be tackled. Or else we're going to end up with more and more stories like the likes of Caroline Flack last year, that everyone was pouring out their hearts over, and rightly so, about what happened. And the next 5 minutes you see someone's being racially abused online again, like it's forgotten. Mm. It's just not good enough from everyone involved in it.
Just from a cobbler's perspective, I mean, look, I put my hands up here and say I've never, ever heard anything racial or otherwise being said at Sixfields, for example. I've never heard anybody in the stands ever say anything towards a player or another person in the stands who is a person of colour. I've not heard that, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. And I think that's actually one of the things that we all need to sort of just realise, is that just because you don't, you know, see or hear it, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. You know, I've never seen £1 million, Danny, but, you know, apparently it does exist somewhere.
It's not by Christian Lee in the end.
No, I didn't. It was all a ruse. So, yeah. Anyway, let's move on and let's go and talk about this coming weekend. I'm delighted to say that joining us live from Danny's basement in Bristol is Bristol Rovers fan, Gashead himself. It's Michael Willett. How are you, Michael? Are you well?
Hello, boys. Thanks for having me. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. I'm very glad to hear it. Let's get straight into it then. Bristol Rovers and the Cobblers, for me, feel a bit entwined in their sort of recent history. If you go back sort of 20 years or so, then we were always there or thereabouts with each other. There's obviously been a couple of relegation scraps, a couple of promotion battles as well. When you've gone up, we've gone up, and vice versa, or it's only taken us a year or so to rejoin the other. This time around, both of us are fighting to stay in League One. Now, obviously, last time we faced each other, you came out on top right at the start of the season. You had what was, would we call it a comfortable win? 2-0. We had a man sent off as well, which doesn't bode quite well, although that man, Joe Martin, is no longer at the club.
Cold about that.
So that can't happen again, which is good. But tell us about how things have been going since that 2-0 victory over us on the 3rd of October, Michael.
Well, I think that was a very sunny day, that particular victory. I think it was our first win in a season. And that was three managers ago. That was Ben Garner, and we thought, this is it. This is funny enough, I was watching the highlights before I came on tonight, and all the comments beneath it were like, this is where the season starts, and, you know, it's only up from here. And to be honest, that game, I remember thinking, yeah, we look pretty good. You know, we passed the ball quite well. And Joe Martin, by the way, used to play for us as well. He was on loan. Bizarrely, we loaned him when we were in League One. We loaned him from Stevenage, who were in League Two. So nobody could understand it. He played like 10 games and scored a worldie at Sunderland away, I think, and then disappeared. So he ended up at you guys and got sent off against us. So, yeah, he wasn't much of a player. But, yeah, so as far as like Bristol Rovers and our journey this season, it has been unbelievable, really. I honestly, before I came on tonight, I thought, right, well, how on earth am I going to be able to sum up the whole season? It's been such a almost ridiculous story, really. Sacking managers, poor recruitment. You can list anything, really, that's kind of been a reason that's contributed to our sort of downfall this year. But somehow, still in there, just about, just like you guys, just kind of probably at many points this season, probably thought, I think we're down now. And then suddenly a win out of nowhere, and you're back in it again, which is classic football. You just never know. And as much as Saturday feels like a must win, it's really that the must win games are always the ones that are, you know, going to keep you in the division. So even if one of us loses on Saturday, there's still a chance. But, you know, it's unbelievable what we've been through this year.
It's unbelievably tight as a league as a whole, really, isn't it? I mean, you go from bottom place Rochdale, they're on 33 points, come up to us in 19th, and we're only on 39. So it's not unrealistic that we could still end up finishing bottom. I don't want that to happen, obviously. But out of all of the bottom six, it's only the two of us who have played 40 games. So we are literally, we've got six games left of this season to go, and that is it.
Yep.
Everybody else has got a game or two games in hand on us. Like you say, it is a must-win game, this on Saturday, for both sides. It's just do or die at the moment. But every single time that you get a good result, it seems that the other teams around you get a good result as well. It's so hard to call. And I don't know whether you sort of feel in limbo. We say every week on the pod, don't we, Danny, that, you know, like at the weekend, on Friday, we beat Shrewsbury. So we're all like, yes, we're in it. You know, we're battling and we could stay up. This is great. And then we lose to Hull on Easter Monday in a very bad performance. Lackluster, I think, is a good word to describe it. And you're instantly just going, well, there you go. We're down. It's just a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's been like that pretty much all season, really, for us. Just, you know, we were talking about must-win games back in January. Like, it just felt like, surely now, you know, this is the moment we're going to start kicking on. It's been really strange because for the most part, I've often felt like the squad that we've acquired this year isn't bad, and it's probably lacking maybe a few leaders. We let go a lot of experienced players in the summer, and, you know, the kind of direction of the club was very much like, well, we want to bring through younger players who've got their careers ahead of them, and we can, you know, maybe sell them for profit. And they're very open about that kind of strategy, and which makes sense, you know, the whole we'll buy low, sell high kind of thing. And, you know, we'll hopefully won't sort of impact our ability on the pitch. But, you know, we sold Johnson Clark Harris for, I think, 1.2 million to Peterborough, and he scored 26 goals this season. And you take that amount of goals out of any team and they'll struggle, particularly at this level, because I don't believe there's a massive difference between the top and bottom. So you take 26 goals out, that is the difference between top and bottom almost. And, you know, we've suffered as a result. We've tried to gamble on maybe other players, maybe younger players, and they're just not quite ready yet. And, you know, as I say, without the leadership in that team, I think we've really struggled.
Is it all down to Johnson Clark Harris leaving? I mean, I know you've said that there are other factors as well, but, I mean, there was a point last season, was it early doors, where you were right up at the top of the league in League One, and he was the top goal scorer in the league, banging them in for fun?
Yep. So, I mean, we had... So that was the four managers ago. That was Graham Coughlin. So we had Daryl Clark before that. He got sacked. I mean, bit of a legend, Daryl Clark. Shout out to him. But he got sacked. Sadly, you know, his sort of era came to an end. Graham Coughlin came in, and he was this sort of, you know, defensive coach and a proper old school manager. Never really managed before, but had this kind of, you know, ethos of, right, we're just going to get in their faces, you know, backs against the wall. And the football really wasn't pretty. But whilst he was there, we signed Johnson Clark Harris, and, you know, he scored goals for fun, and we were pretty good defensively. So you managed to tick both of those boxes. You're going to be pretty competitive in any league, and that's really what happened. But when, bizarrely, Graham Coughlin left and joined Mansfield, who were in League Two, you know, which, you know, incredible set of circumstances. I mean, we beat Ipswich away, and we all thought, and we were third in the table, and we thought things can't get better. And then in the presser after, he basically announced he was leaving, and we couldn't really believe it. And then we appointed Ben Garner, who, you know, was a illustrious coach. He'd been around, you know, the sort of top end of the game coaching, apparently worked with Jose Mourinho and all this stuff. He had all these stories, but ultimately hadn't managed at all. And the inexperience really kind of shone through, and we just sort of plummeted through the league. And really what saved its job was actually the season being curtailed. And then here we are, really. They kind of backed it in the summer to, you know, sort of ship out all the kind of older players, shall I say, and then build a new squad together. But then 11 games into this season, they sacked him. So they backed him, then sacked him, and we kind of just had this weird chopping and changing all season long, and it's really bizarre, really. We've kind of ended up in a weird situation where we've had three managers, and none of them have really had the time with the squad to really put their stamp on it. So it's been a really strange season.
Can I ask about Joey Barton, seeing as they're on managers? So we had, we did a live show after Keith Curl got sacked, and we were throwing it around all the names, and Joey Barton's name came up, and a lot of people were surprised when I said, actually, I wouldn't mind him coming in because he knows the league and he did quite a good job at Fleetwood. Obviously, there's a lot of controversy that surrounds him as well. Mm. What did you think before he was appointed of him, and has that changed at all since?
There was a lot of talk about Joey Barton immediately. And I think one of the general theme around, you know, as the season's progressed, is that the squad lacks that kind of that toughness. And so the next manager needs to be someone who doesn't take any mess in, you know, who's going to fire them up, kind of thing. And so, you know, in comes Joey Barton. And I think that the sort of the view beforehand was, you know, I personally didn't really think much of him. It's hard to know really what he's like as a person. I know he's got a hell of a rap sheet that's not very impressive, which is one thing. I thought he did okay at Fleetwood, but I think Fleetwood have just always been a sort of, you know, they've clearly got a bit of financial backing and been able to bring in some pretty good players like, you know, Paddy Madden, Ched Evans, people like that. I mean, they must be on a fair wage, probably more than we probably wouldn't be able to afford players like that, sadly. So I think he did a good job at Fleetwood, but I was always a bit kind of, it wasn't mind-blowing. Anyway, when he came to us, it really split the fan base. I mean, the fan base was kind of at each other's throats for a while. You were either a bit of a snowflake if you didn't like him coming in, or you were a thug apologist if you're a fan of his. You know, it was an odd time. But his record since he's come in has also been pretty atrocious, to be honest. And now the kind of narrative is that, well, it's not his team, so he needs next season, he needs the summer to kind of, you know, build his own squad, which is fair, to be honest. And he does say the right things generally, like he's really fired up. He wants, you know, he was talking about, he was running over the suspension bridge, and he said he looked out across the city, and he said this is ours to take over and stuff like that. And he thought, bloody, you know, this guy, he knows football fans. He knows that we're all going to love this. But ultimately, you got to win games, and we've not done that enough, and we've looked a bit better. But it's, you know, we won, you know, fantastically on Monday. So naturally, as football fans, suddenly now we're all on board again. And we'll just see what Saturday brings. But it's a bit mixed. And I think generally what you end up getting is, you know, you kind of end up in a situation where people who were really against the appointment were almost reveling in the fact that we'd lost five games in a row, and very quick to point out that they'd said that they were against the appointment. Suddenly they'd gone a bit quiet because we won on Monday, and suddenly the other lot are getting a chance to say their piece. I'm just kind of in the middle. All I want is for Bristol Rovers to succeed, and if that's Joey Barton, then so be it. You know, I'm all for it, really.
That sounds very, very familiar to how our fan base is, Michael. So do know that you're not alone. One thing that I wanted to jump in and say, actually, was when you would say about what Joey Barton said when he was out running, that sounds like something that's come straight out of the Ian Holloway playbook.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely brilliant. I absolutely love that. And yet, I'm not a massive fan of Joey Barton, but hey, if he was going to say, the other thing is, of course, Daddy, this is your opportunity. Roving reporter, get out there running and find Joey Barton on top of a suspension bridge. Just see what he does. Hopefully he won't hit.
Yeah, it's poetry, that was, wasn't it, that you said?
Absolutely gorgeous. I was having a quick look before at players that, as I said, we do seem to be a little bit entwined. The two clubs with certain things, so big games that are in the history of the clubs, but also players as well who have played for both. And the first one, the most obvious one to go for is John Joe O'Toole, I think, of recent times. I mean, you guys weren't happy at all, were you, when he left you to come to Sixfields?
Well, it was strange. I mean, I was always a fan of John Joe, but we got relegated out of the into the conference that season. So there was a lot of angry gas heads at that time. And he'd kind of done an article for, I think, a national newspaper, and basically within it he'd said, and this was right in the running, you know, maybe five games to go, he'd done this article, and it was about how, you know, he sees himself, you know, beyond Rovers and kind of pushing up the league. He doesn't want to be at the foot of League Two, kind of thing. And that obviously didn't go down well with the fans at all. But I think he was just that kind of sort of free-spirited sort of bloke. He just kind of said what he felt. And obviously, on the last day of that season, we get relegated. And of course, we've got fans on the pitch and are all pushing and shoving. You know, basically, everyone's after blood at this point. And poor old, you know, John Joe, he's just kind of caught in the firing line. I mean, he got out okay, I think. I mean, it wasn't too bad. It was just, you could, you know, the aftermath of that was this guy, you know, he totally screwed us over, kind of thing. But I never really held that view. And I thought he was probably one of our better players that year. Did all he could to keep us in the league. And it was the problem was not him. It was definitely elsewhere in the team.
I think he was your, am I right in saying he was your top goal scorer maybe that year, or at least he was one of?
I think he was, and bizarrely, I think for a side that got relegated out of the Football League, I think we ended up with two players in the team of the year, which is a bit of a kick in the teeth, if I'm honest.
That's incredible. I've never known that to happen.
Yeah, I know. Mad. Amazing. But there you are. That's Bristol Rovers for you.
More recently is Chris Lines. Now, obviously, Chris Lines, he's a gas head as well at heart. So getting to play for his boyhood club, he was one of your own, as the song goes.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's now at Stevenage. I mean, do you still look at where he is and how he's doing as a gas head?
Fantastic player, Chris Lines. You know, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on him when during his time here. But he came through... he came through the youth team. He would also get a bit of stick. I mean, it wasn't always plain sailing for him. I mean, I think he was one of those lads that, young lad in Bristol, and I think he kind of enjoyed the nightlife a little bit, and he kind of had that about him. But when he left us and he joined Sheffield Wednesday, I think he really realised then, you know, okay, I'm at a proper club here. And he when he actually came back to Bristol, to help us get out of the conference, he was just a class above everyone else. I mean, I know we were in the conference, but he just had that. You know, certain players just have that sort of aura about them, and they get the ball, it just feels like they've got all the time in the world to do what they want, just because they got that confidence and that ability. That first touch is just better than everyone else's. And yeah, he was just a revelation for us, and it was so good to get him back and get promotion. Yeah, he was just a really good lad as well, and he'd clearly grown up and realised he wanted to come back to Bristol Rovers, and he's still very much in contact with the club as well. So it's all ended well, really.
Obviously, Keith Curl there was a former Bristol Rovers player from many, many years ago. But one other player that has graced both the Mem and the Six Rules turf is, of course, the one and only, that's right, it's Chris Carruthers. Any memories of old CC for you there, Mike?
I thought you were going David Hunt for a minute, Charles. I thought you were going David Hunt.
Chris Carruthers. Well, I mean, he was involved in a side that got promoted out of League Two, and he did okay. Yeah, he was all right. I think he was one of those that kind of was a little bit scapegoated a lot. He was a player that if we lost a game, generally people would tend to point the finger at Chris Carruthers, but he had a decent left foot, and yeah, he was all right. Was he at you before at Rovers or after? I think, did we sign him from you?
Yeah, I think you signed him from us. He played for Oxford as well. I don't know whether that was in between or not. But yeah, he was in our youth team. And the reason why I mention him is because I went to school with him.
There's the real reason.
So that,
he hasn't mentioned that this season yet.
No, not at all. No, not at all. Him and Luke Chambers. I'd never mention that, do I? So there you go. Okay, there's some players that have played for both. The other thing, and this is something that is a topic that we always get onto at the moment these days, is the issue of ownership of the football club. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but aren't you owned by some ridiculous millionaire?
Yes and no. I mean, so our owner is Wael Al-Qaadi, and he took over the club with his family about 5 or 6 years ago, and his family are from they're sort of Jordanian bankers, really. So they're wealthy, but being bankers, they're kind of very careful with their money. So it's not quite as lavish as it sounds. It's not a case of like we've just right now we've got a bottomless pit of money we can just spend. Very clearly, they had this sort of tagline of it's not revolution, it's evolution. I don't know if they're actually talking about billions of years before we actually see any progress, but I hope not. But what happened in the summer was that Wael actually took full ownership. So he bought out the rest of his family. So he now very much kind of owns the club, at least about 95% of the club, I think. So what we're seeing now is a little bit more of a kind of plan, because there was always this feeling before that the family were kind of holding him back a little bit, that this was his project and the family weren't really invested in it. So we always had this sort of delay of not really sure. There was always talk of like new stadiums, training grounds, that kind of thing, but nothing really happening. And that's, we've had that ever since I've been following Rovers as a boy. We've been talking about new stadiums and new infrastructure for as long as I've been around. So this all felt very familiar, of all talk but no real action. But since he's taken full ownership, what we have seen is the development of a new training ground, which is fantastic news for the club. That's probably caused some issues as well this year with we've kind of moved to this new training pitch, but it's not complete. So all the players, there's no training, there's no changing rooms or anything in place yet. So they've just got the pitches. So all the players are kind of turning up already in their, already in their training gear and stuff. So it's all a bit, it's not quite as slick as I think they want it, but it's progress. And I feel like we're a club maybe in transition a little bit. With this new approach of you know, developing players, selling them on, that kind of thing. But the annoying thing for me is that we've got that plan. They were very open about that plan. But then to sack two managers in a season kind of suggests that, hang on, you do want some kind of revolution. You know, this idea of, you know, is for the long term. You've got to give some of these managers a bit more time to make their stamp felt, I think. So I think there's a lot of heart and desire at club ownership level to do well for the club, but I'm just concerned that there's not a lot of maybe football experience on that board that can just calm things down and just have a proper plan. Because at the moment, it just feels like it's words, and it's not really being demonstrated by the decisions that have been made, I don't think.
How connected do you feel to the club with him as the owner?
I think pretty well. I think he's a very likable person. I mean, obviously, it's been a tough year anyway. I think the club have done really well in terms of reaching out to the community and things like that. They have done that really well. One thing they're going to do with the training pitch is have kind of like a plaque with all the names of people who bought season tickets this season as a kind of reminder of, you know, these are the fans that stood by us when no one else would, kind of thing. And I think that's a kind of nice touch. And they've done really well at that kind of thing throughout this period. But, you know, what we don't want to see, and what Bristol Rovers fans have had to kind of get used to over the years, is whenever things start going bad on the pitch, I'll just release a good, you know, a few good statements and positive words, and suddenly we're just going to lap it up. And we generally do, because we're so sort of invested in the club. We want the club to do well, and if they're speaking positively, then, you know, that's great. But ultimately, things do need to start progressing, and I appreciate that right now is the hardest time for all clubs. So, you know, just surviving is probably enough for now. But longer term, we obviously just want to be starting to progress as a football club, really.
I've been looking up, obviously you've been in and out of form a little bit recently, but I've looked up a couple of players in particular, because they're ones that I naturally get worried about, and that's goal scorers. And the one I'm kind of highlighting at the minute is Luke McCormick, who scored both goals against Doncaster, on loan from Chelsea, and it's really seems to have got going under Joey Barton. I think he hadn't scored until like December originally. Seems to speak quite highly of Barton and what he's done to change his game. But he seems to be one of these players that he really reminds me of what Callum Morton did for us last season, in terms of he's got that youthful sort of confidence, and he just seems to have that star touch about him that's above this level. Like, you can tell he's going to play at a higher level, and that concerns me a little bit going into this one, because he just seems to be really thriving under Barton.
Yeah, well, I he's a big fan favourite, as you can imagine. I mean, I think initially when we signed him, we've had a few player young lads from Chelsea, and he haven't quite worked out in the past. But yeah, he's really mature. I mean, he comes across brilliantly as well, like in his interviews, very sort of level headed and completely bought into the ethos under all of our managers, I might add, that he just seems to be a real team player. You know, and people love him because he just works incredibly hard. He's a real workhorse. But the kind of flashes of brilliance, I saw like a highlight reel earlier that a Rovers fan had put together, like all of his goals, and all of his goals are absolute, you know, blockbusters. I mean, fantastic. And he has that in his locker. But for every wonderful strike that we see in the top corner, I probably see about five or six scuff shots that go past the post every game. He also has that in his locker where he can be a bit, he's just so sort of energized and so kind of keen to make an impression. Sometimes he doesn't use that energy in the right way, and he can sometimes be, against some of the better sides, he can be almost a little bit of a kind of headless chicken sometimes. But he is young, and he will get better. I'm sure that if not next season, maybe later in his career, I'm sure he'll be playing at a higher level. But he's been really good for us, and you know, he's definitely in form at the moment. I would say actually before Monday, I wasn't sure he was actually developing that well under Barton, but certainly Monday he was absolutely just had one of those games where you're like, blimey, you know, he kind of won us that match there. And yeah, long may that continue, at least for the next six games, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
A couple of other players I wanted to mention, that younger players that Barton's brought in. Zane Walker, who's 19, he looks quite a lively player. I think he was playing an under-18 or under-23 game, and Barton just had a look and said he wasn't training with them. So he brought him in, seems to have done well since he's come in. And the other one, Pablo Martinez, who's 20, who actually came off the bench for Oxford City against us in the FA Cup earlier in the season. Less said about that, the better. But but obviously he was playing in, that's the sixth tier at that point, and he's suddenly come out of nowhere to play in, I think, out of position in the middle of the park, and it seems to have quite a calm head on young shoulders, which is pretty much exactly what you need right now.
Yeah, you know, I was a bit concerned at one point, because one thing that sort of frustrated me a little bit with Joey Barton was that it didn't take him long. Once he'd got in charge, we'd lost a couple of games, and he was already mentioning about going down and, oh, next season, we've got a bill for next season if we go down and all this. I thought, hang on, we haven't got relegated yet. And then he started playing the likes of Pablo Martinez and Zane Walker, and I thought, man, he's really sort of scraping the barrel in terms of, you know, he's almost trying to make the point of, look, I've got nothing to work with here, I've got only kids, but they've really, you know, stepped up to the plate, in particular Pablo Martinez in the games that I've seen him, just really calm, influenced, not, you know, he's pressing well, but he's good on the ball. And I think Zane Walker, he's clearly very young, raw talent, you know, but we don't really have a lot of pace in the team. So when he gets on the ball and he can, you know, just suddenly inject a bit of pace on the wing, suddenly think, okay, well, we've been missing that all year. So it's good to have that as an option whilst we've got quite a few experienced players out injured. So, you know, and in the last six games, you know, you never know. It might just take one of these lads to become the hero that you need. But yeah, it's two sort of solid additions to the squad all of a sudden, kind of out of nowhere. So really pleased about that.
Shall we move on and get some predictions then? It's what we do at the end of every preview show, Michael. We'll come to you last. I'm so scared, Danny, about this game, if I'm being honest, because I'm in that position where I kind of don't want to make a prediction, because I don't want to get myself feeling, you know, too excited or get too ahead of myself almost. But it is a must win, I think. And I'm so worried about how the Cobblers have been when we've been playing in other must win games. But I think of late, those must win games that we've done really badly in have all been away from home. And we've been all right at Sixfields. So
there was Rochdale and Wigan, though, I think, wasn't it?
Well, that's pre-Brady, though, isn't it? I'm going to predict a scrappy 1-0 win. And I'm already regretting it.
Yeah, it's one to just dread. It's especially because you can't be there. And that makes such a difference in these games. This is one where, especially, you want fans in there, and you know what type of atmosphere it would be. Like, weirdly, it'd be a much better atmosphere than it would be if it was a mid-table game. You know, if we were doing slightly better, then people would just sit there and let the game happen. But you think of this and you think, this is pretty much last chance saloon, as we said earlier, that, you know, realistically, if we don't win this game, we're in huge trouble because the fixtures coming up afterward, there's a lot. There's going to be a lot of pressure on it, and you just want the fans to be there. You want us to be able to do something, to be able to encourage them and get behind them, because there'd be a cracking atmosphere inside the ground if we were there. And because we're not, it just makes it that bit more like detached and helpless, you feel, about going into a game like this that's going to shape the rest of the season and probably the next few months as well. So it's hard to make a prediction.
It feels like you're filibustering.
It does, yeah. That's what I'm trying to think of, what I'm going to say. It can't go much worse than the 6-0, can it, that they gave us a couple of years ago.
We don't talk about that.
I'm going to go, I think there's goals in it. I'm going to go 2-1 Cobblers, because I can't envisage anything else. I want us just to have that little bit of hope. 2-1.
Okay. Michael, the last word is yours, my friend. Feel free to give your honest prediction.
you're both right. This is going to be one tense afternoon of football. I'm going to go 1-0 Rovers, because I don't think either of us are very free scoring this season. So I think it's going to be very close. I think I'm going to go 1-0.
It's the fact that all three of us just don't sound confident in A, the prediction that we give, and B, wanting to make the prediction in the first place. I think that says it all for me.
I think really what we need to do is try and work out a plan where we both stay up and we screw the other four over. I think that's what we need to do.
I'd be quite happy to do it, in all honesty. I know
gentlemen's agreement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know Danny would be quite favourable in that. And of course, if we can work out a way of getting Bristol City relegated, that would
probably,
help as well. Then Danny can go to at least three games next season. That would be pretty good.
Your fixtures aren't that great either, looking at them, are they? Like, after this, they're not
like,
great, usually.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we got Blackpool on the last day, and I swear I checked Blackpool out about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they were like 13th, and I thought, oh brilliant, you know, on the last day of the season we're going to be playing Blackpool with nothing to play for. But no, they're right in the mix of the playoffs. So, yeah, I think we're all in that sort of situation. And I know your fixtures are particularly scary on paper, but I think sometimes you get those weird games at this stage of the season, don't you, when teams at the bottom just can turn it on against teams at the top. It just sometimes the pressure gets to the teams at the top, and actually there's a bit of realisation to the teams at the very bottom, and they just, it's almost like sometimes the table flips around. But we'll just have to see. It's going to be, we're all going to age about 20 years, I think, in these next six games. What a year.
Yeah. Charles, quick question.
Hmm.
Would you prefer us to win 5 out of 6 but lose to Posh, or beat Posh and lose the other 5 and go down?
The only way to answer this is to say that right now, as it stands, all I care about is staying up. So, for all I care, as long as we stay up, they could hammer us. But okay, ask me again on the day of the game. Yeah, so when we're previewing that game next week. Is it next week? It is, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, we can ask get one of their fans on, don't we? DL.
Maybe. Yeah, ask me again this time next week, and then I'll tell you whether or not we need to win that game for my season to be complete. Oh, don't, mate. You've made me start thinking about next week already. Stop it, Danny. Bad Danny. That's it for this week's preview show. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to Michael for being our fan from Bristol Rovers. It's been a pleasure having you on, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, both. And best of luck for the rest of the season, sort of.
Yeah, you don't mean that, do you?
I'll stick with
Brilliant. Thanks for listening. If you're interested, right now there is a bonus episode of the pod looking at the NTFC accounts that were released last week. That's a chat between myself and the Price of Football's Kieran Maguire. It's available on the Patreon tier. So if you pay £10 a month or more, you can get early access to that. Otherwise, the pod will be out for everybody to listen to in a week's time. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Please, God, let's win this game and let's go into next week on a high, for the love of...
Way! There's the cup. There's the pictures you'll see on tomorrow's back pages. The Cobblers are going through into Division 1. Bring them on, because we deserve it.
I'm Tom Cliff, creator of the world-famous online stand-up bingo, which started out its life at Northampton Town Football Club. Join me every Saturday at 2:15 p.m. on the Cafe Track Facebook page for your chance to be crowned stand-up bingo champion of the world. Every ticket purchased goes towards keeping Cafe Track and TrackNN a social enterprise dedicated to helping people to access work experience and hopefully employment. Buy your ticket now at buymeacoffee.com/CafeTrack. Make sure you leave your chosen 15 numbers between 1 and 90 in the comment section, and then play along live on the Saturday afternoons before the Cobblers game. So go to buymeacoffee.com/CafeTrack now and get your ticket for the world famous stand-up bingo.